7,000 feet up, 20 pairs of Fae stormed through the trees. They crept through the clearing to Malachi's immaculate vacation home, which overlooked the endless skies at the edge of the island. Each of the mentors turned themselves and their students invisible. They divided tasks. Half would overlook the property from above, strategizing the best route of attack. The others would creep around the perimeter, collecting what they had been for weeks. Clues, sound bites, or glimpses of the man himself. Fia followed Mila up the stairs of the deck which hung over the edge of the island. Other Fae circled around the windows on the first and second floor. Fia tiptoed and kept her composure, understanding the privilege of where she stood. The smell of 6 coyote corpses rose from the wooden deck table. Fia breathed through her mouth. They looked through the window. There he was, Kavadi, right there in the kitchen in front of them. His back turned, he threw up his massive biceps in heated argument. When he shifted out of the way, she saw his counterpart, Morgan Bane. Mila did not respond to this, perhaps because Kavadi had been camping in Malachi's old home. Her insides trembling, Fia did her best to not make a sound. The two leapt out of the way as Kavadi slammed the door to the deck wide open and stepped outside. "Don't follow," Fia heard him belch before smacking the door closed. Morgan opened the door behind him, but in a much calmer way. Kavadi grabbed a large knife off the table and flipped a coyote over to slit down from its anus. He ripped its skin off and began sliding the knife up its right leg. "My students outperform themselves every day," Morgan said. He plopped his chest down next to the coyotes. "You have no say in what I do in my spare time." "True dedication means a lack of spare time," Kavadi said. He pulled the flap off the coyote's leg and cut inch by inch up its belly, pulling the skin apart with each incision. "What is all this for?" Morgan gestured to the coyotes. "Father's cloak is time for peace. I need something a bit more intimidating." He kept cutting. "I am dedicated to my dad's mission, but his killer is still on the loose, and that remains a priority." "He's a drop, Morgan. A drop. Forget about him. We're going after the ocean." Kavadi worked his way up the dog's leg and pulled the rest of the skin off over the top of its head. He tossed the innards over the island's edge and hung the skin on the railing. He moved on to the next one. "It's too late," Morgan said. "It's not your concern, but I found where he lives. He's a kid, a nobody, by the name of Christopher Sala."
"How do you know?"
Kavadi asked. "It wasn't easy. He's been masquerading by a different name. Christian." Morgan took the key off his neck and unlocked the chest on the table. "How did you find him?" Morgan's muscles strained as he lifted the chest. He flipped it over, and a massive head fell out and rolled across the table, stopping at the tail of a coyote. The head of a troll. "Harsh interrogation," Morgan said. Mila smacked her hand on Fia's lips, suppressing her squeal. Morgan and Kavadi turned, looking their way. They flew off, signaling the others' retreat with a tweet from a bird call. The Fae gathered in a large meeting room in the academy, one typically reserved for professors and administrators. The elder Fae laid their map notes about on the long table of smooth, thick oak. They stood around the table in a tight huddle.
"What caused your retreat?" the oldest Fae asked with a booming voice.
"Christopher Sala is the name of the werewolf who killed Malachi Bane," Mila said. "I think he lives among the trolls."
"Lycanthrope," Fia corrected her.
Mila's eyes knifed her.
"What?"
"Or person with lycanthropy would be better." Mila looked back to the elder, harshly ignoring her mentee. He rubbed his beard.
"How peculiar. The trolls are not much for welcome, are they?"
Mila shook her head. "That's why it's taken us so long to find him."
"What do you suggest?" another Fae asked. The students remained in silent observation of the meeting.
"We have to find this kid before Bane does," Mila said. "He murdered a troll just to find out where he lives. He'll torture the boy. Let's go now."
"You know that must be approved by the council," Zaya chimed in.
"We can set up a meeting tomorrow."
"Meanwhile, he might die tonight," Mila said. "The good news is," said one of the Fae in the corner, "now that we know who killed Bane, we can finally send enforcers to arrest his prick son."
"Well, the council can," said Zaya. She freed her wavy ginger hair from the bun it was tied in. "We will mention it tomorrow, but I doubt they'll approve it until this Christopher kid is in custody." Mila groaned. After the meeting disbanded, Fia followed her mentor to her office.
"It's ludicrous," she said, leveling with her.
"What is?" Mila asked.
"This administrative nonsense. We know what we have to do. We know what's right. Why can't we just do it?"
"Well, the council does know best," Mila said. She unlocked her office door with a swish of her wand and they stepped in. "But I do wish it wouldn't take them so long.
Morgan may kill the boy tonight before we get the chance to arrest him. Arrest them both. Mila joined her student, sitting in one of the chairs in front of her desk.
And he's been working for Cavati this whole time?
Fia asked.
With. We have reason to believe they have quite a history. Cavati and Malachi Bane's relationship dates back years, apparently.
And Morgan now runs the school? What is he teaching the students? How have you let this happen for so long?
Fia said, her voice escalating.
It's not me, it's the council, Mila said. Detaining him when we first found out might not have been such a bad thing after all. At least we have the wolf now.
Lycan. Mila's expression thinned the ice Fia stood on even further.
Fia didn't finish the word, but cleared her throat.
But don't you think Cavati is a bit more important than one kid who didn't even do the crime on purpose?
She asked.
I do. But Cavati hasn't done a thing since the attack on the Capitol building. He's been in hiding. Since legendary Eliana is safe and the army trains, the council has prioritized other missions.
What could be more important? Fia asked.
Are you joking?
Mila said.
Cavati is one person. The council has done all the necessary preparations for a threat of his size. The crime syndicate hasn't fallen asleep since he attacked. Goblins are still out there selling illegal weapons and cursed items.
They're not all goblins, Fia said.
You're right, said Mila. Just 98%.
Fia scoffed.
I'm tired of the council. I hate them.
Don't say that. A lot weighs on their shoulders.
We need to fight. You know that, right?
Fia said. If Cavati attacks, I'm not going to stand by and wait for the council.
The council has never let a Fae enter combat.
But we need to. I'm not going to let them kill everybody while they just sit there.
We're not trained for combat, Fia. You'll die.
I'll just reunite with my body.
Don't be cocky. This is not a game. The army would not be successful if we didn't do our part. We would not be successful if they didn't do theirs. Same goes for the council. We start disrespecting our roles, and the whole thing falls apart. Then we lose.
It's not that complicated, Fia said. You know what is right. I know you want to go after Morgan right now.
If it was meant to be, the council would have decided.
How can you say that, Mila? People are wrong. When Cavati comes, I will not be stuck in a classroom. When Cavati comes, I'm going to face him. I refuse to watch people die.
I don't know how you can.
This attitude is the reason you were banned from Quest, Fia. We all have a role to play, Mila said.
You need to learn yours.
When Drexa called, the warriors joined her in the longhouse. They piled in, cramming to the back where she leaned against the bark it was made of. She sat beside a large map of trees thinning to an open pasture and a house leaning off the edge of the island. It had no labels. Ira and Cumin sat out of the way at the end of a bench, letting the bigger brutes among them take the center seats. As Drexa kept leaning, Ira noticed the darkness of the soft skin around her eyes. She looked tired, beaten.
3 days. Drexa said, addressing the large group. She didn't get up from the bark.
Ira didn't feel intimidated at all this time. If anything, he was worried about her.
That's when we attack.
Her voice was soft.
We will leave here at sunset in full armor and skins, she continued.
The whole army fell quiet at her tone. Not a single warrior made a joke or whispered to the person next to them. They just listened, pressing to hear what she had to say. She lifted herself from the pole and crossed the map. At a thicket of painted trees, she jabbed her long fingernail.
This is where the dragons will be tied. The Fae have done numerous tests and have assured me there will be plenty of space and it is far enough that they will be out of earshot.
Not a cough came from the crowd. From here, we will crawl 2 miles toward the pasture, looking no more menacing than the average woodland creature. Many moments passed while Drexa stared at her army. Ira wondered what point she was trying to get across, if there was one. A claw came from the back of the group. Drexa cleared her throat.
Yes? She called upon it.
Then what? The warrior shouted.
Then we wait.
Another moment of silence passed. Cavati's daily commute involves heading in that direction each and every morning.
Where does he go? Asked a warrior in front.
The Fae are unsure, Drexa said. Each time he dips into the woods, they lose him. Unsurprising, he's slippery as any shifter. But they assure me he will continue his routine. He adheres to it without flaw. It is not unlikely he has a day job, changing his face as he wills.
We will stay there all night, she continued, catching as much sleep as we can while keeping with a lookout schedule.
By daybreak, he will approach us and, on my call, we attack. Drexa called on a warrior a couple rows in.
Excuse my ignorance, he said, but isn't all of us on one threat sort of overkill? Literally?
Do not expect it to be easy, Drexa said. No number of people in the world has ever killed a legendary before. A couple gasps sputtered about the group. So it's true then? Someone asked. It's confirmed? No, it's not confirmed. Well, confirmed as any of them are. Isn't that the case? Drexa asked. Ira could feel the tension rise. Even if he's not, Drexa continued, he may not be alone. The Faze have seen him associate with Morgan Bane, someone who I understand is a very gifted fighter himself. He is the new headmaster as well, if any of you stop giggling with each other enough to pick up a newspaper. So, to answer the young man's question, I do not think bringing in the entire army is... overkill. In fact, I think our only advantage in the attack so far is that he will not see it coming. She crossed the map once more and leaned back on her pole. These next 3 days we will hone in our targeted attacks. If assassinating Kavadi means too much sacrifice, we will retreat to our transport and rely on their support in combat as well. The warriors paused with their leader.
Isn't she supposed to be boosting us up?
Cumin whispered to Ira next to him. Ira scratched his smooth face. When has she ever done that? So, the werewolf who killed Malachi Bane, Morgan Bane's father, was Christian the whole time. Did you see it coming? I would love to hear if that came as a surprise or if it was obvious the whole time. Everybody who I know who has read this story has said that it came as a surprise to them. And the good news is that there's more surprises coming. I mean, that one's a big one. And even now, I mean, Ira... who is, like, in this story, Christian's best friend, he doesn't know yet. So that's obviously coming soon. And so, yeah, that's kind of a big deal. Okay, so the phase storm where Kavadi has been staying, which is one of Malachi's vacation homes. And it's interesting when they go back to the meeting with the Elder Phase, who work directly for the Council and not for Fae Academy. You'll notice Mila... kind of takes the role of Fia. Like, so far, Mila, has been, like, trying to bend the rules and work around everything, and Mila's been the one that's been really keeping her in line. Well, when it gets to the Elder Phase, that's sort of the relationship Mila has. Like, not as radical as Fia, in that, like, obviously she very much cherishes the council's opinion and cherishes her elder's opinion and thinks that the rules are important and ultimately wants a career as a council fae. Whereas Fia cares about that less. And all that kind of becomes apparent after that meeting when Fia and Mila start talking where they actually differ. But I think this is the first time that we've shown that Mila isn't exactly as rigid and clean cut as maybe she's seen so far, that she actually does understand in her heart what is right and wrong and might be willing to break rules to accomplish that. Just not quite as radical as Fia. It's pretty much confirmed that Kavadi is a legendary, which means that he's pretty much invincible and that they won't be able to kill him. So that'll kind of be interesting as they have 3 days until the attack. So that's kind of something to be thinking about is like, I mean, you can't kill a legendary unless you're a legendary. So, in theory, it doesn't matter how big the army is. Kavadi could essentially still kill them all. So that's something that, Mila talks about how the council is even less focused on Kavadi now and is focused on the crime syndicate, which was mentioned way back in the very first episode, but has kind of been down for a while, because Morgan's one of the leaders in the syndicate, and then of course he quit and became the new headmaster. And the reason why I bring that up is, of course, this book that I've been obnoxiously talking about with Bone and Iron. It's like a 30-page story I have in it, which is Morgan's backstory. It finally came out. It came out on Saturday, so you can check it out on Amazon, hardback, paperback, and the ebook's only 99¢. So if you just want to read the story, I'm pretty sure it's like super cheap to just do that, just so that you can read it and kind of get to know a little bit about more about Morgan, if you want. And in fact, I'll even read
the intro and outro. So how the story works is it takes place when Morgan's 16 and when he's going to the academy before Bane's school was for goblins. And basically the story is about his transition of what makes him join the syndicate and become an assassin and do horrible things. But the story actually doesn't start there. It starts when Morgan dies. And I kind of went back and forth on whether I was going to spoil like when this happens and whatnot, but I realized it's not really a spoiler because the book's out, the story's out, so you can read it. So I might as well give it context. And basically, as it's written now, Morgan dies at the end of the second book, which is called Legend of Sekou instead of Legend of Eliana. Yeah, so I'll just go ahead and read. So basically, you have the intro, which is when he dies, and then the outro, which is like modern times, which is like a year after the end of Legend of Eliana. So it's like way in the future, past where we are right now. And then it flashes back to when he was 16, when he was Ira's age. But yeah, just to kind of give you a taste of this, I'll just go ahead and read the beginning and end. The entire forest ignited the night Morgan died. His brother roared to the stars, noise hardly suffocated by the crackling smoke. This rage spread in flames for hundreds of miles, fresh rainfall providing no protection against the heat. Thriving evergreens caught instantly until endless acres of old growth thinned to ember. Fauna, fleeing from their ravaged shelter, cried with him, but none of Kavadi's followers left the scene until it was black as he felt. The bonfire tonight was but a small echo of Kavadi's rampage. None but a few scattered goblins joined, allowing him to sulk without much chatter at all. Kavadi looked deep into the flames as if he were staring straight into the place they came from. Great changer! Hugdal interrupted the silence, breaking him from his trance. Kavadi forced his stiff body to look at the kid. My dad told me stories about Father Morgan from decades past. He told me he was the most feared man on Tatu. The quiet killer. The most expensive, too. 1,000 links ahead. Who knows what the council would have paid for his. They never would have gotten it, though. That's how talented he was. The whole island knew his name, but they didn't know his secret. The fire crackled. Kavadi didn't say a word. Forgive me, sir, the young goblin continued. I just don't understand. The most dangerous man on the island, the coldest, merciless executioner, gives his life for you, his estranged brother. The others in the circle held their lips tight, resonating palpable nervousness toward Hugdal's line of questioning. I mean, if you were to believe the legends, you would think he was incapable of love at all. The surrounding goblins flinched when Kavadi straightened his spine, but the man didn't get angry. He simply remained, arms folded, continuing to stare into the fire. Then he spoke. He did love. Once. Okay, so from there, they go back to when he was 16, and it talks about his first love and basically what turns him evil. And then after the ending, which I'm not going to spoil any of that, if you want it, just go get the ebook or go get the physical book, either way, but you should definitely read it if you're interested. And then here is the ending, and this is back at Morgan's funeral. As formidable waves crashed into the boulders below, Mavis slid the casket lid over her cousin's still body. It was the last time Kavadi would see his brother's face. Mavis had whittled the box herself with ether, turned it to a brilliant glossy black. After the crowd of goblins had said their final goodbyes, they watched as dark energy consumed the casket. Mavis lowered it but an inch over the ocean, and it floated farther and farther from the mansion. Kavadi watched as his brother drifted slowly away from him forever. He thought more about what the young goblin asked him. Morgan's relationship to Kavadi had never been warm, but full of jealousy and resentment. Hugdal was right. There was little warmth to Morgan at all. The coldest killer Tattoo had ever seen. He drew his magic with a strength few could comprehend. Not from fire, like Kavadi, but from a darkness colder than ice, the lone substance filling the universe's vast emptiness. And yet, he had given him his life. When the casket became just a dot against the sliver of sun remaining, Mavis pressed a swift palm toward the tiles below her feet, sending Morgan's cold body into the frozen depths forever. Kavadi could almost feel his brother hit the ocean floor. That's when he felt something else among the crippling cold. That's when he realized it had been there, flickering, wishing to be freed, the entire time. Present when Morgan sliced each victim to pieces,
present when he fought for even the cruelest goblins to receive an education, present when the village mob murdered his mother in defiance, present when the beast slayed his father, present when he filled the role of headmaster, present when Tattoo itself crumbled by his own hand, present when he jumped in front of the blast that was meant for his brother, and present, too, when his corpse sank deep into the icy void for eternity, was a fire, hidden, one Kavadi couldn't conjure in a dream. Okay, so there's obviously some spoilers there as to what happens, but whatever. The story's out now. You might as well read it. You might as well know what happens. And yeah, that's it. I mean, that's kind of the biggest thing as it goes on. I know in Legend of Eliana, we don't really get super, super deep into Kavadi and Morgan's relationship. But as you kind of get more to know them, I mean, they're both evil, obviously, and both have different motives and are powerful, extremely powerful in their own ways. But that ultimately is the difference between the two, is that Morgan is capable of love and empathy and Kavadi isn't. And if you want to get even deeper about it, I mean, it's because Kavadi was born a dragon. So Morgan literally has a humanity within him that Kavadi cannot comprehend. And just to spoil it even further, I mean, you'll notice basically throughout Eliana, Kavadi and Morgan bicker about their vision the entire time, and that's going to happen all the way till the end of Eliana. And that's more or less the same in Seku, too, the second one, is they have very different visions, and they're butt heads constantly. So when Morgan dies, Kavadi's kind of free, and all of the humanity and all of the love and everything that held them back is now gone, and Kavadi becomes unleashed on the world. So anyway, yeah, check that out. It's on Amazon. With Bone and Iron is the name of the book by Erie River Press. And let me know what you think. I mean, if you're interested in this at all, it's definitely kind of a must read to get to know Morgan. And meanwhile, I mean, we're coming to the end here. I mean, like, obviously, Drexa said it, 3 days, and the Piazza Warriors are going to attack Kavadi. So, and we found out Christian's the werewolf, so Morgan's literally going after to kill him as we speak. And yeah, things are getting intense. So as always, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to All Ages of Geek, and I'll talk at you next week.